Back together again, you and I, wrapping it up for a busy week on Friday, March 27th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. We talked about a pending bill, get this, at the state capitol that might hit state businesses with additional monetary penalties if they use artificial intelligence to reap higher profits while reducing their workforce. And we also heard wrap-ups from Fairfield GOP State Senate member Tony Wong and former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep Chris Caruso.
All right. Hey, how is everybody today, huh? You all right? All right. Good, good, good. You know the way to get a hold of us, get a hold of us at 203-333-9422-333-WICC. That'd be the number. You know, sometimes you read stuff that is so patently dumb that you're wondering if it just feeds into a stereotype. If somebody suggests this stuff because such dumb stuff is suggested all over the map here, that somebody feels, well, we just have to keep it going. Somebody sent me this. Now, again, we all know how the wonderful state of Connecticut, our home state, we know what we love it, the nutmeg state, the constitution state, the state of confusion, you know, the real DPRC, the Democratic People's Republic of Connecticut. We all know that we don't show really well in a lot of those surveys that are conducted by, you know, the usual suspects, the Wall Street Journal, CNBC, Market Watch, ABC News, Fox Business, who look at business friendliness. Now, a lot of people say business friendliness is too friendly. It veers too far to the right. And okay, you can discuss that. But there's some stuff that you read and you just say, if I'm a business guy, a business gal, if I am somebody who is, appointed a position where turning a profit is something to be done with the lowest possible cost, you wonder if those people say, well, forget Connecticut, we're not doing it. And again, we've talked about artificial intelligence a lot on this program, on Lisa's show, on Melissa's show. What's going to happen with AI and jobs? All right, well, you know, listen, we don't make horse and buggies anymore. There's no horse and buggy shops anymore. You know, there's certain things we used to do in this country that we stopped doing because times have changed. AI is coming whether you like it or not. Now, personally, I don't think any state, including Connecticut, touch AI. Connecticut, there should be federal AI regulations, and that's it. But get this. It's a good piece here. This is from the Hartford Business Journal. Greg Bordenaro, who we've had on the show a few times. You ready for this? Now, you wonder why. You wonder if this is something that's done just to keep certain people happy or they're serious about this. Get this. A new proposal before state lawmakers, that's a problem right there, would require the state of Connecticut, or as again, one of my heroes, Bill O'Neill, who would say all the time, the state of Connecticut, would require the state of Connecticut to study and potentially tax certain productivity gains because you used artificial intelligence and other workplace technologies, right? So I guess if back hundreds of years ago, what, 15 the years, the 1500s to the 1600s, Connecticut lawmakers would have taxed Gutenberg because he figured out a way to not to handwrite Bibles from page 1 to page 1000. He started printing them, the Gutenberg Bible. That was technology, though. Good thing old Goody. Not Steve Gutenberg, not that guy. Good thing old Goody is not in the state of Connecticut today because he'd be getting taxed because you're using AI. And yes, it's a jobs thing. I understand that. But here's my point. If you go ahead and do that, what is a company that makes a heavy use of artificial intelligence going to say or think about coming to Connecticut or having an affiliate in Connecticut? Now, again, this is, I urge you to calm down when I bring these things up. But the reason I bring them up and the reason people send them to me is because You know, big trees don't become big trees right away. There's a little seed, there's a little sapling that happens, and eventually after 5 or 6 or 7 decades, here we go. Bill number 515 tells OPM, that's the governor's budget office, right? They crunch the numbers, to develop a plan addressing what it describes as a productivity gap, situations in which companies increase or maintain revenue while reducing payroll. Oh, this is what we're going to do now. We're going to go after companies. And again, this is not a law yet, but I'm just telling you what the thinking is here. So let me see. They're worried about situations in which companies increase or maintain revenue while reducing payroll, which sort of kind of happens with most companies on a daily and worldwide basis. The plan, which is kind of the swabbing in the arm before they jam the needle in you, the plan is due this coming January 1, 2027. You ready for this? God, I hope this is just to keep some people quiet. Because if we're thinking of doing this, we have lost our collective minds in 2026. With AI being the new norm, we're going to tax it. This is, see, I know all these legislators, some are in the area, some others. Well, why I have a bill about AI. You no. Stop it. That's like, again, that's like taxing the printing press. You know, the printing press ended up costing a whole lot of money, a whole lot of jobs. Old Goody there, Mr. Gutenberg.
We don't have to handwrite the Bibles anymore.
No, Goody, look at this. No, Steve, I'm kidding. The plan would include a formula for a new surcharge on employers whose revenue per worker rises as payroll declines, effectively allowing the state to recapture part of those gains. Can you, this, God Almighty, are we this stupid? Don't answer that or whisper to yourself. The bill also calls for a permanent tax exemption for augmented productivity, defined as increased output achieved through technology while maintaining a stable workforce. Oh, so the literati in Hartford, the glitterati in Hartford, to say, well, we'll let you keep more of your money if as long as you have more people there. Really? 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 So the state is the CFO and the chief financial officer and the chief officer of every business here? Come on. Now, you listen, the state has its due to say that certain business taxes should be paid and what can be assessed at what level. I get that, but come on. The proposal reflects a growing policy interest. Policy interest. That's to make it sound better. A policy interest in how advances in AI and automation are reshaping labor markets and business operations. Yes, like the printing press. Would the Democratic majority in Hartford tax the printing press, I'm wondering? Duck Mr. Gutenberg, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So we start with this today. As ludicrous as this sounds, because businesses will look at this and say, well, are you kidding me? Go blank yourself. Should Connecticut potentially tax business gains? I guess I should rewrite that. I'll do that on the break. I'll put it to profits. Or maybe it's a could be a portion of the business market. Okay, and I'll keep it at gains. Tied to using artificial intelligence and other workplace tech. Again. We have gun criminals that get soft sentences in this state because we don't prosecute people. We have an electric grid that's almost at or near capacity with no changes as to how we can cheapen in people's electric bills. But we're going to worry about businesses using AI. Well, Paul, what if you lost your job to AI? Yeah, well, I got news for you. The radio business went to automation systems years and years and years ago. And, you know, it had an effect on this business. Cars aren't built by hand anymore, right? Even on the assembly line. The welds are not done by hand anymore. They're all done by computers. Robot welding. Did they tax people on that? Mind-numbingly stupid. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Artificial intelligence. Listen, listen. It's coming. There's nothing. It's being used right now. First, we had automation years ago. Did that cost some jobs? Yeah. Did it create other jobs? Yes. And then we had the early CAD CAM, computer aided design, computer aided manufacturing, especially for tool and die and machinists and all that. Did that cost jobs? Yeah. Did it create jobs? And did it create a new segment of schooling and expertise to maintain all the equipment, all that equipment? Sure did. The same thing is going to happen with artificial intelligence. But according to what I'm reading here in the Hartford Business Journal, is a wonderfully reputable publication. It looks like Connecticut is ready to, I guess we're ready to tax it already. Greg Bordenaro, who I believe is the editor of the Hartford Business Journal, somebody sent this to me. There's a new bill, raised bill 515. I think it's a Senate bill. Usually the three-digit bills are Senate bills. Not sure. But you ready for this? It would include a formula for a new surcharge on employers whose revenue per worker rises as payrolls decline. My God, they actually, these horrible business people, they want their revenue per worker to rise and they want their payrolls to decline. What are they, capitalists? And yes, I'm not saying you have to love everything about capitalism here, but if it's done within the law, if it's done with some due diligence that you're not a ruthless employer, you're not breaking laws, who cares? And I don't mean to be callous about who cares, but this is a natural progression. People forget a lot about natural progressions in life, in relationships, in dating, in kids, in parenting, in growing up, in growing old, from making that first widget to a few more widgets to being the worldwide leader in widgets or sprockets, as Mr. Spacely was. As opposed to Mr. Cogswell, who made his big mark in cogs, but I digress. But get this. The bill would, and again, if you're a business person looking at Connecticut, if you are one of those guys that always, or gals, that always hears Governor Lamont talk about, well, you know, look at the people we have in this state, and we have all these colleges and all these smart people, which we do. Well, Governor Lamont said, Governor Rowland used to say, Governor Malloy used to say it all the time. Okay, hey, your CFO goes, hey, have you looked at Connecticut, whatever? Oh, okay, yeah. But then you see this. Under the bill, again, a productivity gap would be measured when an employer's revenue per employee hour increases while the Connecticut-based workforce or payroll declines. Oh, a surcharge would be structured to reflect the difference between baseline productivity levels and reduce payroll costs. Revenue from the surcharge would then be deposited into a new workforce and economic stability account to fund retaining, technical education, and career transition programs for displaced workers. Come on. Stop. At the same time, companies that use high tech and AI to boost productivity without reducing headcount would get a tax exemption on those gains. if lawmakers do not adopt the implementation by July 1 of 2027, the bill authorizes OPM to move forward by issuing procedures to carry it out. You hear that? Now, this bill is not signed yet, but listen to what they just said. If lawmakers don't adopt some sort of an implementation by 1 July of 2027, the bill authorizes OPM to go ahead, do it themselves. Now, there was supposedly a public hearing on this today. Come on. Come on. Do you like this? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So if you're an employer and you use artificial intelligence and you're able to cut jobs, nobody likes laying off people or firing people, but the revenue per worker that you keep on the job increases, but you get rid of some workers, this would enact a formula for a surcharge on employers. Really? Really? Maybe I'm the jerk here. I don't think so. You tell me. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Here's a guy we love hearing from. Keith, thank you. Tony Wong, Republican State Senate member, Fairfield. Tony, how are you, sir? What's going on?
I am terrific, Paul. Albeit a little sad and devastated. Thank you for having me on, first and foremost. Yeah. But today I heard that Dr. Henry Lee passed away.
Yes, yes.
And for me, Dr. Lee was an inspirational role model as a proud fellow Chinese American who immigrated from Taiwan like myself. Mm-hmm. And he was an example of resiliency, strength, and grace against tremendous odds. And he was able to honor me with his friendship and guidance and really inspires me. So I really wanted to take a moment for many of Connecticut residents who do not know of his legacy to find out about what a remarkable man he was and his contributions to public service. He was a dear, dear man to me.
Tony, thank you and our condolences. And yeah, numerous times I had the opportunity over the years, not here, but at previous stops in doing this, to happily interview Dr. Lee. What a guy, an incredible scientist, set new benchmarks for forensic science, and was always a kind, humble man when I spoke to him. Tony, in a few minutes we have left here, update my listeners on some key bills. Was there any major action today? I know there's so many controversial bills, the homeschooling bill, the self-checkout bill, the gun bill up there. There's just so many here, Tony, and now the clock is ticking on some of these. What's the latest our listeners need to know?
You know what, Paul? The clock is ticking and being able to have a lengthier conversation with you. But if I could sum up this session, it really is a real reminder that even this weekend we're going to have a huge No Kings rally. And much of today's political conversation is really focused on Washington, D.C. And we hear the constant concerns about executive overreach, concentration of powers, and leaders who dismiss opposing viewpoints rather than engaging with them. This is what the No Kings rally is going to be espousing. But those concerns are real. They're real to me nationally. But if we truly care about protecting democracy, transparency, and having a real representative government, we've got to also look closer at home. And what I mean by that is we have seen examples where public hearings have been limited and controversial issues have been kind of conscripted, and being able to restrict and limit the time and opportunities for public hearing and engagement. And whether you agree with some of these controversial issues or not, mm-hmm. to be able to limit public debate and to, in some cases, put controversial debates one after another on the same day and the same time is a abuse of power in my mind. And I think that is one of the major points that I'm trying to raise, is the fact that for those that are protesting about No Kings and the seizing of power on a national basis, they need to look a little closer to home with the supermajority of one-party rule and some of the policies that are being initiated. the biggest news this week is about Aquarian and the Pura decision to allow the sale to a regional water authority. But people need to remember that this language was put forth nearly 2 years ago in a suspicious and untransparent manner in a special session. And so people didn't have a chance to fully vet, but that was the basis of legislative authority to allow these things to happen and dictate PURA to decide what they must. And if you think that only happens 2 years ago, we had a special session just recently this year in which nearly 40 bills were cobbled together in the middle of legislative session under an emergency certification that it was under one vote, yay or nay. Mm-hmm. And that's not democracy. That's not transparency. It's an abuse of power and a disrespect to the people that were electing their representatives and the people who have an opportunity to voice concerns that laws that are being impacted and implemented impact them. So, you know, if you really care about democracy and you're protesting tomorrow about no kings in Washington, you got to look first and seeing how it is potentially violated and not protected in Connecticut. And that one-party rule and the lack of balance. I think there was a quote that I ascribe to repeatedly in my Senate floor debate is, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I fear that we're going that way when the conversation about any kind of dissent, any kind of rational objection to state policies, the argument turns to Washington.
Yeah.
Make no mistake about it. It's unfortunate.
It is. It is. Tony, thank you. Appreciate it. Keep fighting the good fight, my man. And you know how to get a hold of me. Text me, call me, whatever you need to do, okay?
Thanks, Paul. Always
appreciate it. State Senator Tony Wong there, Fairfield, joining us right now. Is one of the voices of sanity here in the greater Bridgeport, Fairfield County area, multi-term state rep from Democratic Bridgeport, also on the city council for many years, Chris Caruso. Chris, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. Doing well.
Chris, we're in the short session now of the General Assembly. It's called the three-month session, obviously, from early February to March to April to May. So we're well into this now, and there's so many of these bills, Chris, that get run up the flagpole, and people like me talk about them, and some get hearings and some don't, and some are voted on, some aren't. Chris, at what point now in this legislative session, from your past experience, does a legislator know, hey, we're kind of doing this one just to keep people happy, it's got no shot, or we're not sure about this one, or this one is going to be a slam dunk? You know, you always say it doesn't get voted on unless the majority thinks it can pass. Are we at that point here now, Chris? Where are we in this session?
I think you're getting close to it, Paul. Don't forget, next week we'll start April, and the first week in May, I believe it's the first Wednesday in May, is the end of the session. Keep in mind that the second session, so when you serve a two-year term, the first session, which is 6 months, you work on the budget and finance issues. The second session is not supposed to be involved in the budget and finances. It's supposed to be other issues. But what's happened over the years, it's kind of blended, and now you see more finance issues coming up. So in that first term, that first session last year, you actually adopt the budget. And so there isn't adjustments really to it until the following year. But in this case, you're seeing a lot of that. So now when you get into April, everything is, the committees are meeting their deadlines when they have to pass the bills out of those committees. It goes into the giant funnel, and then it slowly works its way down. And frankly, any bill that's very controversial, that doesn't have a great deal of support, the leadership would not bring it on the floor. Because if they bring it on the floor, it takes up a lot of time with debate, and then the clock keeps ticking, and other bills that need to be passed won't pass. So a lot of it's going to be getting through the deadlines, but then the viability, the strength of the bill moving through. The more support it has through the committee process on the floor of the Senate, the better chances that it will pass. If not, then it will be one of the casualties, and yeah. next year is another session, and that bill could be brought up in.
Yeah, so again, Chris, you're illustrating, as our people like to say, how the zazich is made up there.
Exactly yeah. right.
So just because something doesn't pass now, it doesn't mean that, you know, the sides for it and against it don't glean something, say, from a massive public hearing that may have gotten contentious, and they're all there taking notes about, okay, we leave this in or we take this out.
Yeah, that will be leadership. There's also a committee of people that screen the bills, which means they make sure that the bills are in order, ready to go. And as time goes on, the less and less time you have, the likelihood of bills dying becomes, you know, increased. So at the beginning of session, every legislator is entitled to put their own personal bills in. There's thousands of bills. But when you get at the end of session, many cases, only 300 you know, bills are passed. So it's the process is designed, frankly, to weed out the bills that don't have the support and move forward the ones that do. Mm-hmm. And it's just designed that way. The deadlines of committees, the public hearings, and then in those committees, what support is there? For example, in the Social Services Committee, there were many bills that had bipartisan support. So the good chance that those bills will make it onto the floor and most likely will be passed. But bills where there was a lot of controversy, you know, a lot of people speaking at the hearings, mm-hmm. it's going to be harder to get that bill, you know, through the process and out to the point for a vote. And leadership looks at it and says, hey, we only have so much time. If I allow you to get on the floor on this bill can go on for 15, 16 hours.
Yeah.
So what you do is you eat up that time, and then other bills that are as important don't happen. And I think that's part of it. Some bills up there, Paul, yeah. are discussed, but they've been in the process for 20 years. You know, every year it's wow. come up, they couldn't get the support, they bring it up again. Public financing, for example, when I led the fight on that bill, mm-hmm. it was 20 years of effort to try to get something passed.
God bless
so
you.
So it's very, yeah, I know, it's very common. And when you listen to some of the committee meetings, you know, the chairman will say, this bill has been around for 20 years.
Yeah.
But we're going to keep trying until hopefully we get it to pass.
Wow. Chris Caruso is the guest, of course, joining us at this time every Friday right here on Connecticut Today at WICC. Chris, I know the money is always discussed up there. I know you saw this today, Keith Fanoff's story in the Connecticut Mirror. And I know this will cut close to you because, of course, you know, you were so close to the budgetary stuff there. As most states' reserves have dwindled, Connecticut's safety net has grown. The median state's government ended the 2024-2025 fiscal year with enough reserves to operate for 47.8 days, down from the record center setting 54.5 days. But Connecticut is doing actually better than that, Chris says here.
Yep.
That Connecticut could operate for, this isn't bad, Chris, if everything dried up,
no.
over 2 months, 67.4
yep.
days, up from 60 days last year. And Chris, I know outwardly his party has to complain about it, but if I'm a Democrat, I'm saying to myself, all right, we'll do the social issue stuff. Let Governor Lamont do this budgetary stuff. He can be the hall monitor because it's working here, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. And the other thing, Paul, that, you know, and Keith is probably the, I guess, the best reporter when it yeah. comes to the budget. He really understands it.
Yeah.
But Connecticut is the fourth, how should I put, the best economy in the country.
Yeah.
It's the fastest growing. It's amazing. And just based on what you've said, you know, I think it's working. And that's why I think it's going to be very difficult for an opponent to beat Ned Lamont. You know, there's complainers and people that gripe on the sides of all, but I think, you know, he's positioned very well. If that answers your question. I hope
yeah,
I got that
oh,
right.
Yeah. A few more minutes here with Chris Caruso. Chris, it's interesting now. We're kind of starting to edge near the process of the state conventions and of the nominating convention. Now, it's 15% from what I understand that sure. that Josh Elliott would have to come up with. They say his fundraising has picked up a little bit, Chris, to where he sure. might qualify for, I think it's 3-point-something million bucks under the program that you started sure. years ago. Do you think the $3 million would give him enough money, even though he'd be going up against a behemoth in Ned Lamont's record here?
Sure.
You know, would that give him enough money, Josh Elliott, to get out, you think, his more progressive voice here or not?
Oh, I think so, Paul. $3 million is a lot of money. It's basically how you use it. And big thing in campaign is message, organization, and funding. Mm-hmm. So I think it's how you manage that budget, but I think it's more than enough to get the message out. I think the challenge Josh is going to have is going against an incumbent who has name recognition, has been the governor before. I think that's always the harder thing to fight. The other thing is Josh's positions are progressive, and there's people in the state that are comfortable with Ned Lamont. Even and mostly Democrats, because when you look at Democrats, Republicans, it's really moderates that you know affect the elections.
Yeah.
However, primaries have always been very good for progressives. You know, in some cases they've won and have beat incumbents. Mm-hmm. I don't see that happening here though. And this is no knock on Josh; he has a right to run. But I think as time goes on, it's going to be more challenging because I think the economy is good. I think the state's moving in the right direction. There's areas for improvement. Don't argue any of that. The energy costs have to be brought down, no question. Housing an issue. But I think many times people look at who you have, what he's been able to accomplish, and I think that's the case with Ned Lamont. On the other side, the Republicans, there's going to be a food fight between the three or four that are running. So that only weakens a candidate that will go head-to-head against Ned Lamont.
Yeah,
and
Chris,
the other thing is...
Just on that, before we wrap up, sure. if you're in the Lamont campaign, of the three sure. major Republican candidates, who do you fear the most?
Of the three, Erin Stewart.
Okay.
And because she was the mayor of a large city, New Britain. From all accounts, she did a fairly good job, you know, as mayor. You know, and I think she's getting out there. And I think, you know, she probably of the three, I think those would be. And I think I've stated it before on the radio with you that I think of the three, she would be the one because she'll take in that Hartford area. I think she can reach into other parts of the state where I think Fazio is going to have more challenges up in the Hartford area, which is a big population of people. And the third one from New York, Betsy, I think it's Betsy.
Yeah,
it doesn't have the name recognition. So I think the real fight is going to be between Fazio and Stewart. But I think Stewart has the edge. If I was looking at candidates, mm-hmm. I would look at her. She's been around the state a lot. She's covered a lot of different areas. She's going to be down in this area soon. And I think she's getting her name out. Mm. And again, she's going to use the record as mayor of New Britain, which is, you know, Fazio's a senator, which is fine, but doesn't have that municipal experience that often what people judge it by.
Chris, always great to get your weekly check on this stuff. Chris Caruso. Chris, thanks. Have a fabulous weekend, and we'll talk next week, sir. Thank you.
Okay, Paul. Take care.
All right. Chris Caruso there.